Yeah, it is 6 a.m. here.
Yikes.
And I had a brutal workout yesterday, so that's why my voice is all gravelly and stuff. So.
Right, that's why your voice is gravelly.
Okay, well, I guess I'm ready. Yeah.
You want to do some jumping jacks? You want to like snort some espresso or something?
Oh, no, because my legs are dead, basically. Yeah, you should have seen yesterday's workout. It was insane. The guy that does plans the workouts is basically a maniac at this point. Like, I'm just, yeah, it was weird. But then I watched Stripes and, you know, I have that going for me.
That's so, good. Yeah. You were doing some army basic training and now you're tired, but you're in the mood.
Yeah, I'd be doing the Bill Murray push-ups from the beginning of the movie right now. That'd be me. Like maybe two push-ups and the third one, I just dropped that basically.
Well, he won $3, so that's all good. So you're barely awake. I'm very sweaty in my hot office, but we're glad to have you here, and we haven't had a guest in a really, really long time. So we're glad to have you.
Well, you're glad to have me. Joe isn't. Like, Joe was against this from the start.
No,
we all know that. Like,
the
level of enthusiasm is higher on Dan's side than it is on Joe's.
No,
like,
Joe
is basically against this. So, yeah. Okay, Joe. Well,
No. You got it all wrong. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast. I just didn't think it was humane to ask you to be up this late or early or however you want to view that. it just didn't seem appropriate. Because of our weird, we have very particular recording times that we can actually do this. And to make you on the other side of the planet do this, for you, this is exceptionally inconvenient. For people in America, this is an inconvenient time to record. So thank you very much for participating in this wonderful experiment.
Experiment's probably the right word, yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, it's like I do like the show, and I did pester you about Stripes, so you know, you had to cave anyway. Dan really did want me on the show. I just liked that from the record. Right? Like,
we both wanted Dan, you on the show.
Well, that's open to interpretation. Let's agree to disagree there. But yeah, okay.
I was thoroughly confused at your selection of Stripes. Not that I think Stripes is a bad movie. I actually quite like Stripes, but I have no idea why you like Stripes so much.
Oh, it is my movie. Like, I saw that in the 90s for the first time. It was on TV here. And I swear to God, it's somewhere in my room. I couldn't find it, but I still have the VHS tape I made when it was on TV.
You like recorded it on VHS from your TV?
Yes, yes. And then I watched it about 70 times in the 90s, basically. Me and a couple of friends would just get together and watch Stripes. Like this, no, genuinely, this is one of those movies that's, it's one of my movies, you know? It's like one of those. Seriously, it's one of the best movies ever. Although I should say, like, I'm used to the TV edit.
Yes, right? So which was
is, I. Yeah, which is an hour and 30 minutes. And in my opinion, better than the original.
It's a little lighter.
Yeah, and it's tighter, I think. Like, some of the scenes in the full movie are sort of, I understand why they're gone in the TV edit, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually like it more, the TV edit. It's sort of, it's punchier, like it's tighter, so yeah.
Well,
that's the one I have on the VHS tape. And I still have a VCR, by the way. So.
Just so you can watch your copy of Stripes?
No, because I digitize VHS tapes for friends, so yeah. Because I've done all of mine. I did not digitize the Stripes one. I do have the internet. Like, I don't wanna, yeah, but yeah, I still have, there's a VCR behind me, yeah. A good one. It has one of those, you know, when you would rewind it, it has one of those smart heads or whatever. So it kind of slows down at the end of the tape so it doesn't destroy the tape. Like, that was a big feature. Like, when my dad bought this in, like, the mid-90s, that was a big feature. Because, like, the old ones, you'd rewind it, right? And then when it would get at the end of the tape, that's how it would know it was there at the end. And it was an old tape, which, like, destroy it, basically. And this one sort of slows down at the end, which is nice. We're talking about VCR. Like, I am not awake, guys. Like, just ask me stuff.
It's fine. So I was actually surprised watching this. I mean, I know I've seen it a bunch of times, especially on TV. But this is definitely one of those movies where I knew way more lines. Like I was saying them out loud while I was watching the movie, and it was kind of surprising me how many of the lines I just knew by heart. But at this point, you probably know the whole movie by heart, don't you?
Yeah. Because it's like I did. Like it's really. I don't know why I like it so much. Like this is my favorite Bill Murray movie. Like hands down. Like none of them come to, even like when you guys talked about Ghostbusters. Like I do like Ghostbusters. But Stripes is the one that, like, those, you know, Ivan Reitman 80s comedies, that's the best. Like, and I do know the whole movie by heart. Again, the TV edit, right? I did watch the longer one this time. But, yeah, I don't care for the scenes that were added. So, yeah. But, yeah, but knowing it by heart, absolutely, yes. And it starts out awesome. Like, the first, well, before they, like, actually joined the army, that's probably, like, my favorite part.
Like you mean where literally everything that could possibly go wrong for Bill Murray goes wrong?
Yeah, and I just like the fact that they took the time to sort of set up the characters that way. Like if this was a movie from like the 2000s, the whole, you know, everything's going wrong would be one scene. Like it'd be a scene where something goes wrong. He's at the recruitment office. He's in the army. I think that's how it would work now. But like here, they actually take their time. And the Russell Zisky English lesson is, man, that's my favorite.
It's pretty fantastic how he's so upbeat about this goofy job that he has. You can just tell he has no idea what he's doing or what, just in life in general, and he's just wandered into this job.
Yeah, and the son of bitch that's, you know, I don't know. Maybe I identify with that more because, you know, English is not my first language.
Is that the first thing you learned in English?
No. No, I started learning when I was 6, so it was probably like a nursery rhyme or whatever. So yeah. So how do we go about this exactly?
We're there, man. We're just gonna talk through the movie.
Okay.
Surprise.
So,
Joe, what do you think of this movie? And have you seen it as many times as we have?
I can't say quantitatively if I've seen it as many times as you have, since that was sort of like a vague often thing, but I know I probably have not seen it as many times as our friend Ajay has. I think I said his name wrong again. But
no,
yeah,
that was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Good me.
You want to get your pronunciation out on the record just for everyone listening, just to remind everyone?
Okay, Ajay. I do have that clip of John Syracuse saying it on my site.
Right, the pronunciation guide. We should go listen to that again.
Anger.
Well, that was actually close, yeah. So, yeah, it's Anger Tomic. That's the full name. That's with my last name. But Tomic is kind of like easier.
Well, you got to get the do. You can't just say Tomic. Because an American would say Anze Tomic. But that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for Anze. I lost the question. Anze yeah. Tomic.
Yeah, it's Anger.
Anger. Anger yeah. Tomic.
I do love that clip. I just listened to it like a week ago for no reason. Like I just love John Syracuse trying to say my name. It's like one of my favorite things ever recorded. So
should make it your ringtone.
Yeah, I should. I really should, yeah. And then just put a techno beat under it. Okay. Yeah, Joe, so do you actually like this one or is, you know...
This
is going to be the same old story, basically.
No, yeah. I like it, but I agree with both of you that I have fonder feelings towards the slightly more edited TV version than I do towards the feature length fare that you can get. It's a little long and disjointed, and there's a lot going on. I don't think it's as tight as other Ivan Reitman movies that he's made, but there are funny jokes in it that are very, very hilarious. So there's like highs and lows throughout the whole thing, as opposed to where I think I would say that Ghostbusters is more consistently high for me than this movie is. But you know, that's a personal opinion thing. I mean, it's just both of those are vehicles for humor. And in both of those movies, we're talking about, you know, Ivan Reitman directing them. Harold Ramis is one of the writers on both of them. We've got Harold Ramis starring and Bill Murray starring, and they're essentially playing mostly the same character type in both of these films. They're, you know, in this one, which of course precedes Ghostbusters by many years, it's basically sort of your proto Venkman and your proto Egon that would be a little more evolved in Ghostbusters, but it's the same sort of chemistry between the actors, and so I think anybody who likes Ghostbusters should definitely watch Stripes. I think it would improve their understanding of the wonderful world of Ivan Reitman comedies and Bill Murray and co.
Well, yeah, but like the thing about those like Ivan like those 80s comedies, they're actually funny. Like the jokes, you know, because like Hollywood has made like for the last 15 years comedies that are sort of trying to be like that, but are never as funny. Like if it's either the acting or most likely it's the writing, right? But like those movies are just, I don't know, they're genuine. Like, do you know the Ivan Reitman movie Evolution? Right? Have you seen that?
I would say that that's not very good.
Yeah, that's a crappy movie. That's my point. Like that's what people think they were making in the 80s, and like it's basically the same people, and it does not work. It's just a terrible movie, right? At some point, there's a big alien anus in it, right? Which I don't, you know, okay. But yeah, that's sort of what they're trying to make, right? But the 80s stuff is, I don't know, it's like for me, it's genuinely funny. And Stripes was one of those, you know, and Czechoslovakia's in it, which doesn't exist anymore, which always just still makes me laugh. Like even back then, because it just broke up. Like when I saw it, it was already the 90s. So Czechoslovakia was already the Czech Republic and the Slovakia, right? And every time they say Czechoslovakia, I just laugh. Like still, it's one of those things that still makes me laugh. But yeah, I don't know, it's it's one of the good comedies Hollywood's made. At least that's my opinion.
But yeah, this being an 80s movie, it also kind of has that same sort of thing that Real Genius had, where just sort of like three quarters of the way through the movie, it basically just turns into another movie. And your second movie starts when they go off on their jaunt to Germany and everyone gets captured by the Russians and all that. But it's pretty much two distinctly different movies. The first half with the hilarity and the basic training, and then just the adventure at the end, which is kind of an 80s thing that it feels disjointed. But I mean, it's one of the many reasons that this movie is hilarious, because Bill Murray. I mean, like, I don't know how much of this could be attributed to the writing versus just Bill Murray, because so many of the lines and the things that he actually does in this movie just feel like him riffing, and I would be perfectly happy letting him riff on set if this is the kind of stuff he does.
Well, yeah, because that scene at the beginning when Harold Ramis comes to the apartment, right, with the basketball, but just before that, when Harold Ramis just throws his coat onto the coat hanger.
Mm-hmm.
And actually stays there. That scene is really long. Like when you see it, like I don't know how they could have. That's like a Jackie Chan, you know, like the, like one of those things where they. It looks like they had to either do it like 50 times to get that right, right, or it was like the second take and they just used it because the coat stayed up.
Well, he did look genuinely excited when it stuck. He had like a little like fist pump, like yeah, got it.
Yeah, yeah, but like the little like those little things that's the thing I love, because it's sort of like it looks like they cared, right, making the movie somehow for me. And then there's the basketball, which is one of the is that a classic scene? Can we say that's a classic scene?
Yes, absolutely.
The basketball coming up through the other window.
I love how he kind of like menaces him with the large pipe wrench before going to clear the glass at, and then the ball get thrown through the other window.
Yeah, that's one of the like one of those like I watched that like a couple of days ago, and I was laughing, and my girlfriend was just beside me, just nothing, just quiet, and I was dying on the couch. So I don't know, maybe it's just me, but that scene is. One of those. Like I said, the first part of the movie, sort of. You were right when you said it's almost three movies in one, right? But like that first part is like they basically can't do anything wrong there. I think for me,
I think the scene with Anita is a little weird, because mostly every time I watch this movie, I forget the scene with Anita, because I just she's not in the rest of the film, so she just kind of fades off into nothingness. But it, like he briefly mentions her later when he has a panic attack about how he's going to leave. But she just comes out of nowhere, and it's just like, okay, here's some full frontal nudity, and like what's going on here? Like, we're establishing that he's not a very good person, and she leaves, and all that stuff. And there's, for some reason, a very large photo of her. It seems like he has his life both together and not together at the same time. And I think that's probably why I keep forgetting it, because it just doesn't seem to click with everything else in the film. Like, I love the scene after that when he's talking to Harold Ramis, and I love the cab driving scene so much at the beginning of the film, but the scene with Anita just, like, has left my brain every time I've watched this.
Well, the thing about it that always throws me off is when he's talking to Harold Ramis shortly thereafter, he says, you know, I got to get in shape, I got to dry out, or I'm going to be dead before I'm 30. I'm like, wait a minute, Bill Murray was born like 50 years old, but like the idea of him being like in his mid-20s and like trying to get his life together, I don't see that when I look at Bill Murray at any point in his life. So that's kind of why that whole scene is like, oh, you know, you're fun to hang out with, but you really got to get your crap together because we're growing up and I can't date you anymore, so I'm out. But like, trying to put yourself in the frame of mind and go, oh, right, Bill Murray was young at one point in his life, even though he still looked like he was 50.
Yeah, and the thing I find weird with the Anita scene is, like, when he comes home, they're like a happy couple. She just says, did you get my dress? He's like, yeah, I got your dress. Like, she doesn't seem like a woman on the verge of leaving him. She seems like she's pretty okay with him, right? And then in about 17 seconds, she's packing up and leaving.
Yeah.
That's what I found jarring. Like, that's the thing I find the most jarring, basically.
Yeah. Well, he ruined her dress. Maybe she really liked that dress.
That is true. Oh, but we shouldn't go past the taxi cab scene, right? Like, that's probably Bill Murray at his best, especially, like, the physical comedy.
When taking the photos of her and pretending to be drunk on the cough syrup and swerving all over the place.
Yes, but before that, there's like sort of almost a Ghostbusters, you know, in the library goo scene when he's taking the suitcases into the taxi. That I die every time I see that.
Yeah.
When he, like, when it's like, my balls, oh, my balls. That's that's like the greatest line almost in the movie. And that, like, any other actor doing that would not be as great. That I firmly believe that. That's like, that scene is like 85% is up to like just Bill Murray being Bill Murray.
Yeah, it's him riffing just with the weight of the bags.
Yeah,
because like to make that funny, you really do have to know what you're doing, I think. Like, and be endearing at the same time. I think that's Bill Murray's sort of, you know, that's his thing, I think.
He manages to both be endearing and have utter contempt for the other character in the scene. So it's just that we dislike her so much that we're rooting for him. That's why we're not against him. I mean, he's not being a mature, like, fantastic adult. It's just that she's so terrible. We're totally on board with everything he's doing.
Oh, and then there's the line when he first meets her, we say, oh, I thought that was a dog around your neck. And he kind of says it with this voice, which I've never heard him use that voice ever in any movie. Just like when you watch it next time, just like try and hear his voice. It's a weird sort of, but yeah, I also thoroughly enjoyed that. And the throwing in the keys into the river, and then there's actually a sound effect of keys falling into a river, which I find hilarious. Because, like, that, you would not hear that, I imagine, on the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever the hell that is, right? You would not hear the keys actually hitting the water.
I think one of my favorite parts in this whole, like, everything is ruined for Bill Murray is, like, when they repossess his car and he drops the pizza on the ground and he bothers to scoop the pizza back up because, I mean, you know, you're not going to waste a good pizza just because it fell on the ground. You got to scoop that up and take it home to your girlfriend with her ruined dress.
Yeah, the thing that always bothers me there is, why does he throw it like with the toppings on the bottom, right? That always gets me. I'm like, just turn the damn thing over. I know, like, I don't know why, but that really irritates me. Like,
it's hiding the bits of asphalt stuck in the pizza.
Well, yeah, I guess, but I figured, like, just turn it over now so the asphalt bits don't go more into the pizza, right? That's always my thing. Like, turn it around and pick out the asphalt bits. Yeah. That actually irritates me.
It's emblematic of his entire situation, though. His pizza is upside down. It's got bits of asphalt in it. It's just everything is ruined.
Yeah, everything is ruined. Yeah, that's the first 10 minutes of the movie, I think. Yeah.
And, of course, all of this leads up to the fact that he gets so depressed, sitting on his couch that he decides that the army is a good idea, which I don't know about you guys, but that's not really like the first thing that would come to mind if I was like super depressed that I lost my job and my girlfriend in my apartment all in one day.
Yeah, no, this is what I was talking about with the Anita thing, where I was saying like he has his life very together in some ways and very not together in other ways. And like Andre pointed out, like 17 seconds, like they broke up. And so with this, it's just like, well, this is a very sudden shift in your decision-making process if you're going to go to the army out of like nowhere. Now, it's very vitally important that he do this because that's what the movie is, but it doesn't seem motivated by what we've seen so far, since nothing has been like army related in any way. Like there hasn't been like a character who was straightened out because he went to the army. There are those little like news clips that play, but that has nothing to do with him or anyone he would know. It has nothing to do with Harold Ramis. Why Harold Ramis gets dragged along to this makes even less sense. But he commits to do it.
Well, okay. Yeah.
He was pretty entranced by that commercial in the very beginning when he was getting his shoe shined, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, I buy it, but I buy it because I sort of like the irreverence they have towards the army. It's not really, you know, I'm just going to get my, it's about me. It's not about, like, I don't know, maybe because I'm not an American, you know, I actually like that because I'm going to serve my country or whatever. You know, it wasn't that sort of trope, right? It was, you know, it's because of, I need to get straightened out and the army is just
free
sort
food,
of
free clothes, free yeah. travel.
Yeah. Yeah. Free travel is my best thing. Yeah. That's why I buy it, because it's about them sort of using the army. And I genuinely, you do not see that much in American movies. Like Hollywood movies, when the army is involved, is usually like just put on a pedestal, right? And here is just sort of a, you know, a thing they do to get their life together, which I don't know. I find that really great, especially for like an 80s movie, I think, you know. But yeah,
and even when they go to the recruitment office and they've got the very stern guy there interviewing them saying, you know, I'm not saying you'll get out of it everything I got out of it. And he's the guy who got his life straight. They just sit there and make fun of him the whole time. And they don't care at all about the army. They just want to do something new and not have to worry about paying bills.
Yeah.
There's that exchange that I actually heard like Marilyn Mann mentioned once. The have you ever been convicted exchange?
Convicted? Like, no. Never convicted.
No, never convicted. Like, that's, come on. That's, like, that's one of, like, that's so funny. I don't know. I don't know the superlatives I'm supposed to use with that scene. But, like, that is, no, honestly, because, like, the writing that, like that is pretty rare these days, I think. And just the delivery is awesome. And I don't know. I actually like Harold Ramis' acting in this. So, you know, it's, like I said, I'm a fan.
Do either of you feel like Harold Ramis was kind of like winking at the camera the entire time? Like, especially when they first get to the bus depot and he's talking to Judge Reinhold there. He's just kind of like laughing to himself the entire time. I know that's kind of the point of that scene, that he's kind of laughing at the guy who brought drugs to get on the bus with the army. But like, he's laughing the whole time throughout this movie a little bit.
Yeah, he's like, you're aware that he's aware that you're watching.
He's like trying to be funny, cool guy a little bit or something. I don't know what it is, but there's a little something to him.
He's like a smirky, winking kind of a deadpan through most of it. Like he's smiling, but like not like laughing out loud through most things. He is kind of laughing through that drug scene, but like in the recruitment office and stuff like that, he's just basically sitting there like on the verge of cracking up, It's nice. It's actually kind of entertaining. He sort of, in a way, plays part of the audience in many of these scenes. But I don't know if that's just like he was perhaps a little close to the source material since he wrote it. But he's enjoying himself, at least. So there's that.
Yeah, you can sort of see that he is enjoying himself. Yeah, that's. But it's also because he's not a very good actor, probably.
And, what's wrong with his acting?
Oh, he's a way better director, or no?
I mean, he's an okay actor. I mean, his hair, like, let's, Jesus. that, again, this gets back to my complaint a couple episodes ago, where everyone was really okay with long hair touching the back of their neck, and it makes me uncomfortable when I look at that. And I thought it was especially funny when they all came out of getting their haircuts when they first got to the army. They're all touching the back of their neck to realize that they don't have hair touching their neck anymore. It's like, that's the way it should be, guys. What's up with the hippie haircuts? I know it's 1981, but.
Yeah. And John Candy's also.
You had to get that in there, didn't you?
Yep.
John Candy holding his hair like a dead animal that he loved dearly.
Yeah, and the Hare Krishna joke. That's all.
Yes, that was pretty good.
Yeah, and I don't know. John Candy is also like he's great, like as Ox. Like we'll get to that. But yeah, I think John Candy. Like it's sort of weird how many that was an SNL cast reunion almost, right? Or no, like I get the timelines confused, but like a bunch of people, right?
I don't think I don't think they had overlapping years in it, but that might have been how they might have met each other through that. Because Bill Murray, I think, had been off for quite a number of years from SNL, and John Candy, I can't remember exactly what the situation was. I thought he was on the Canadian one or something.
That second CTTV thing that Canada had, I think. Yeah, maybe that was. I'm not sure. Yeah, but I don't know. John Candy is kind of, and I just love just casting him in an army movie. It's like that. That in itself is funny to me, because he's John Candy and he's basically built like a house. So yeah.
Well, I mean, I loved his explanation when they have like their little get to know you thing, and he's every time he goes to like talk about himself in the movie, it's just sort of like another interesting layer to the character. When he initially talks to the MPs, when he talks to the guys at the meet and greet about, you know, how he thought it would be a good way to get in shape and how he, you know, was eating his problems, and then. Of course, later on in the film when he's a card shark and he's taking everybody's money. And he just has all these little interesting character moments that are pretty good for the amount of screen time he ultimately has in the film. He would go on to carry films much bigger than this and like have bigger roles and bigger starring roles. So it's kind of funny to see him as this background character in a way compared to the other things that he's done.
Swallowed a lot of aggression and a lot of pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about that scene that always, every time I see that scene, of course it's funny and John Candy's doing his funny little backstory about how he wanted to take one of those aggression courses, but it cost $400, is that Harold Ramis is just sitting next to him making the most ridiculous faces. Like just, he's either trying to be openly mocking or he's just being terrible at showing any interest or acting ability whatsoever, but just the faces he's making at the back of John Candy's head just makes me laugh every time I say it.
And then there's Psycho, right?
Francis, yes.
Francis is that's probably the best small part in the movie, I think, because he doesn't do much after that, right? And I that always struck me with the whole, you know, any of you homos touch me, right? All of that stuff. I don't know, like in 1981, to even acknowledge homosexuality in such a mainstream movie, that was a pretty big deal, right? I mean, sort of have a blasé attitude towards it, like, right? I mean, that's a, I haven't seen as many, like, American movies, but I don't know. Even back then, it sort of struck me that, you know, it was even like a thing mentioned, even in the recruitment office, right? I have to ask. And, like, Bill Murray's basically openly mocking him, like, flaming or, you know. I don't know, I just found that attitude sort of, it made like, I don't know, that made an impression on me with, like, you know, people in the 80s being basically okay with it. If that makes sense.
It's the mocking of the conservative attitudes of the people in the movie. You know, Bill Murray talks about being from a lost generation of people. And I think there is sort of, it kind of gets muddled in the whole army storyline, but there is that sort of feeling where the characters are in this sort of like middle generation of people who have no idea what they're doing with their lives, but they're rebelling against everything that has come before. It's really kind of buried, but it is kind of in there at the same time, especially in the mocking of the guy at the army recruitment office.
I mean, it's played for laughs in a way that, you know, it's not like a super positive thing, but it's like...
Well, it's basically taking Francis and telling him to shut up because that's what anyone would want to say to that guy.
Yeah, and
yeah, early... but that's my point because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, I sort of... I see maybe more of the positive in it because it's 1981. Like, if this was, like, in the 2000s, yeah, it'd kind of be weird, right? But back then, I don't know, it seems sort of way more progressive than I would have imagined.
Yeah, actually...
Or, I don't know, yeah.
I actually kind of like the line when they're in the recruiting office and he says he's willing to learn. I thought that,
yes.
That
was... yes. That's another one of those lines that always sticks out.
Yeah, that genuinely made me laugh pretty hard. Because it's, you know... You didn't really need to write that, so it's pretty funny. You know, so I don't know how, through the lens of nowadays, how I would view this as progressive, but, you know, in the time, perhaps, it's just might be a little clunky or off-putting to some people who might be sensitive to that, but I think it's fine. I don't think it's a big deal, especially in the context of the film, how it's used for negative characters viewing it negatively, and our actual antagonist being pretty, like, I don't know, blasé about it. So there's that.
Let's see, who else do we have in the get to know you? That's, well, of course, again, one of the lines that for some reason is always in my head when I watch the movie is when Winger finally gets his turn. Well, yes, oh, yeah. You got the big toe, and then the just the way he opens. I always loved the way he opened. Chicks dig me because I rarely wear underwear, and when I do, it's usually something exotic. And it's just one of those lines that I don't know where the hell it came from, but I love it so much.
Yeah. And,
yeah, and what a way to start sort of a monologue. that's how everybody should open a monologue. Just chicks dig me. That's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, also the fact that he's pushing to be the leader immediately. Because he thinks that he would make a great leader, because everyone needs a leader, and these are the things that qualify him over someone else, and that after he lists these things that really don't qualify him, he then goes on to say, you know, oh God, what's his name, Volker, isn't going to be here forever, so, you know, he's the big toe, you know, right now, but, you know, I'll be the big toe later or whatever, and he does not react. Sergeant First Class Hulka does not react very well to that, and says he will put his big toe up his ass. So there's that wonderful exchange, and the scenes that ensue with the negotiations between them over power struggles over who's really the leader in charge of the stuff throughout the rest of the film. It's all there.
Yeah, Winger wants to be the center of attention, like Sergeant Hulka is, but he doesn't really want to do any work, as noted by on day one, suggesting that everyone get a little bit more sleep, and they postpone their 10-mile run.
5-mile run, and I think then it turns into a 10-mile run.
Yeah.
I thought it went 10 or 15 or something. Yeah, but like regardless, yeah. I love that it's basically the beginning of the training montage that is just intercut with his push-ups in the rain montage.
Yeah, and I love the way the push-up montage is like, it's continuous, right? You see the progression of how many he can sort of do. I enjoy that every time, yeah. And it's the big toe stuff, right? That whole meeting scene is one of the best scenes in the sort of army training, because I feel the Sergeant Hulka getting injured stuff, right? That sort of feels crowbarred in somehow, like the mortar hitting the, I don't know what that the wooden sort of ropey thing is, right? That stuff sort of seems, I don't know, out of place to me somehow. It just seems like it was shot by a different crew. I don't know why, but I do understand that he does need to get hurt so we can have maybe the greatest collective dancing scene ever put on film later on.
Is that so?
Yes, that is. If I knew one thing by heart the first time I saw it when I was, I guess, 8, that was the scene.
So, like, wait, did you learn the dance or just the things that they're saying?
I'm not going to go into details, but let's just say.
I'm going to imagine you got like a baseball bat and you're doing the little dance in your living room while watching the movie.
It was a tennis racket because nobody plays baseball here, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's spectacular.
Yeah, that, why does the chicken cross the road? To get from the left to the right. Yeah, I have such fond memories of that, honestly. Like, I really, yeah, that's, man, that, like, that's part of my childhood. That, I'll say that. I'll go as far as that. Yeah, that's actually part of my childhood. That scene, I would wait for that scene. Like, literally just, I wouldn't fast forward because, you know, respect the movie and stuff. But, like, I would literally just wait for that scene to come on. And, like, later on, it's just one of those, like, I like other things in the movie. But, yeah, back then, man, that is just, I don't know. That's, like, one of the greatest things I saw as an 8-year-old, I think. That was too good, basically.
Well, yeah. We'll talk about that more in a minute because Bill Murray kind of hams up a few parts that I think are a little ridiculous. But I guess part of the reason the basic training stuff feels a little weird is because there's only so interesting a way you can make basic training. I mean, it's supposed to be this sort of like humorous like juxtaposition of the fact that, of course, John Larroquette is looking for like actual good soldiers to head up this project that he's been tasked with. And of course, John Larroquette is introduced in one of the best ways possible. But one of my favorite lines again that of course I always like say to myself, in any situation is when he trips over the thing in the ground and just says, have that removed, and has this little lackey guy like take a note to have the, whatever the hell it was, like the sprinkler head or something that he tripped over.
Yeah. It's not even shown on camera what it was, but it's just an entertaining moment, especially when he has his military grade ascot around yes. his neck. That was pretty hilarious. He has so many bizarre character affectations and strange moments in this film. It's sort of amusing what a pompous jerk he is, and his you never at any point really feel sorry for him, even though he's threatened with going to be repositioned to the Arctic station. He doesn't really like win anyone over for that because he's just so incompetent and terrible at his job, and sort of creepy and weird and
sort of creepy.
Yeah,
the second time we see him, he's got a telescope out the window watching women shower.
Yes, okay, it was a surprising amount of nudity.
Like, yeah. That was a surprising amount of nudity. And as an like 8 and 10 year old boy, also one of the best parts of the movie.
Was that in your TV version?
I need to check that because I actually think it was.
I legitimately did not remember any of that. Like, I own the DVD for this movie, and I'm not actually sure I've ever watched the DVD before today. But when I saw that scene and then the mud wrestling bit later, I was just like, oh my god, this scene is like 10 times longer than I remember, and everyone is naked. What is happening? This is not the movie I remember.
Yeah, but I'm not like 100%, but I'm pretty sure that was in the movie. Like, I don't know. I actually think that was on TV over here in the 90s. Like, I'm gonna be such an idiot if that turns out not to be true, but I'm actually gonna check.
Maybe your 10-year-old brain just filled a lot of that in.
I'm just surprised you have a VHS player.
I'll take a picture, Joe. I'll tweet it to you.
Get that for the show notes?
That's fine by me. It's an awesome VHS player. Yes.
If you have any pictures and or VHS copies of you doing your tennis racket dance, we would love to get that for the internet.
No, that was just for me and my audience of toys. No, I'm joking. Like, that was never recorded.
Did you have an audience of little army toys like John Larroquette that you were playing with and playing Little War?
Again, I'm not going to go into details, so next question, I guess. No. I'm pleading the fifth, right? That's why you Americans always say, like, okay. So, yeah.
I like that phrase has made its way to you, even though you don't necessarily get to use the fifth?
Amendments are not, we do have a constitution. I'm not from some weird country, but, I don't know how amendments would work here. We're a sovereign nation, Dan. We have our own rules. You know, not everything's America, man.
I'm aware.
Yeah. But yeah, pleading the fifth. Yeah. So where were you?
John Larroquette is tasked with finding a squad of legitimately good soldiers to head up a new experimental program for the general, the EM50 project, which is a very, very wonderful, clever name. Basically, he has no idea what he's doing. He's just going to wander around and try and find some people who are competent. The mortar scene is lovely because he's just pacing around all proud of himself, like looking through binoculars of people shooting mortars. And then, of course, you get
Can I just say one thing? The guy that fires the mortar, right? Mm-hmm. He's this guy that was in the West Wing, which I know is a weird connection to make, but I actually, like, I figured
Timothy
that
Busfield?
Out. Yes. He's the reporter in the West Wing that's sort of with CJ. I watch the West Wing way
too
much.
He's been in a ton of stuff. Yeah, he was super young and he's got Coke bottle glasses on in this movie. But
yes, but that's my point because I'm just proud that I figured that out myself. Like I did not IMDb that right when I saw when I saw him in the West Wing. My first thought was that's the guy from Stripes. I swear to God, that's yeah. I'm just really proud of that, so that's why I needed to intervene there. Just go on.
Sorry. No, it's a great scene. It's another one of those lines. Coordinates. Just the way he says that. The army spent a lot of money training you how to use that thing, so set it up and fire it.
Yeah, and then Sergeant Holka falls down. Yeah.
Sergeant Holka falls down. He gets blown off of the top of his little rope climbing thingy-mabob, as you pointed out. By the mortar. And I like his, I don't know, what do you call those sounds that he was making when he hits the ground? He just sounds like a robot, kinda?
Yeah. It's a robot grunts or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Before choking John Candy.
Yeah. Are we done for the day, sir? Oh, that always makes me laugh.
Is this like right after, he tries to have his little bathroom fight with Winger?
Yeah, I think that's after, yeah. Because he's still sort of fully mobile, I guess. Because I think the bathroom scene, he's still okay. He
hasn't been blown up yet. they're fighting over the rope or whatever, their struggle for power. Yeah. I like that they come into the bathroom. And again, another one of those lines, he just very slowly takes off his hat and then I'll take off my hat and just kind of stares at him and says, go on, take a swing. And of course, Bill Murray throws one of the worst punches in the history of cinema with his left hand stuck in his pocket. But, you know, it works for the scene, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was – I think the only punch worse than this might have been a William Shatner punch. But this was pretty bad as punches go.
I can't believe I'm bringing this on myself. What was he punching? Is anyone in this movie in Star Trek? You want to get all that out while we're at it?
Yes. Well, William Shatner never punched Maltz, but Maltz was played by John Larroquette, and he was in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Wait. The guy who's on the talk show?
John Larroquette.
No. Who did you say who punched?
Oh, Maltz. M-A-L-T-Z.
Shatner did not punch John Maltz. That is the greatest sentence I've ever said.
I just want to be clear because I'm not familiar with Star Trek, so you guys have to lay it all out for me.
Man, he would have been a baby.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's why John Maltz is famous or whatever he does now. That was like his second career. It's possible. It's conceivable that John Maltz was in Star Trek. What do I know?
That would be so awesome. So sorry. Okay.
So John Larroquette was in Star Trek. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Well, John Larroquette was also in Night Court, so I think that overrules Star Trek for me at least.
Yes.
Well, I have never seen Night Court.
You've never seen Night Court?
I have. I know about it from other pop culture references. I have never seen an episode of Night Court.
Their opening credit song has some pretty gnarly saxophone in it. You should check it out.
The gnarliest.
I have seen probably every episode of Matlock, if that counts.
No. Oh my God.
Not the same.
Why would you do that?
Which I talked about with John Maltz on my show. We talked about Matlock.
Did you ask him if he had ever been punched by William Shatner?
No, the next time I talk to him, I will definitely ask that, yes.
No, don't do that because it's going to start a whole thing. Oh, God.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Anyway, so Winger gets punched in the stomach by the big toe. And Winger tries to go AWOL, and he tries to sneak out in the middle of the night, rationalizing to himself, and he gets tackled by Harold Ramis in his underwear, which I think is pretty phenomenal.
Yes, and then they meet the lady MPs, mm-hmm. and do things in a chest, I guess. That's a one-back chest. I don't know what that is, but yeah.
That's after the mud wrestling. But yes, of course, we've got Sean Young and PJ Souls.
We cannot go by the mud wrestling because that is probably the most 80s thing in the movie.
Yeah. Soldiers.
Yeah. Okay.
Right now they just go, oh, we'll drop you off and we'll file it as like a UFO thing. You know, we saw something, but we weren't sure what it was, and I don't find that effective or particularly funny. So I don't know why that was the line they chose to go with, but it's there. Also, it's Sean Young and then someone else that I can't remember from anything.
Her name is PJ Souls. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure she's as memorable as Sean Young, which it always throws me off to see Sean Young because, like, oh, right, Blade Runner, Ace Ventura, like all of these different things. And then here she is in Stripes.
Yeah, and I'll always think she's Deborah Winger, right? The actress? Like, they look the same to me.
I can't picture her.
Seriously? Okay. Because I always thought it was her, but younger, and then I figured out it was a whole, like, totally different person.
Yeah, well, it is someone who's younger. Because it's Sean Young.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Joe.
Wow, that's, yeah. Where's Glenn Fleischman when you need him, basically? Okay, and then we have the mud wrestling. I just want to talk about the mud wrestling.
Sure, right. So basically, Sergeant Hulka gets blown up, and then the first thing they do is they hit the town. Winger is their sort of leader and takes them directly to a topless bar/mud wrestling club where some MC running the show looks like he was pulled out of 1974 with his gold chains and long hair.
But is that an actual thing in America? Are there actual bars like that?
tell us, Dan.
There used to be a hotel in Las Vegas called the Frontier, which is cowboy themed. They tore it down a number of years ago. But they used to have, I hear word of mouth from a friend that they used to have amateur mud wrestling on Wednesday nights and like $15 all you can drink beer in a can. So yes, it is definitely a thing, in America, even up till somewhere around like 2008, 2009. It is not nearly as interesting as this movie would lead you to believe. It's mostly just a room full of like 75 dudes and maybe one or two women, but, it is and or was a thing at one point in time.
That's amazing, because just the logistics of getting a mud pit together, I do not know how that's financially sort of feasible.
These days, again, I hear from a friend who's not me that they use this sort of like powdered substance that they just like...
Oh, that's the most American thing ever.
Yeah, they spray it down with water right before everyone goes to town, and there's not nearly as much mud as this. This basically looked like there was like a pig farm or something in the middle of this bar where it was just like 3 feet thick of mud.
And again, a lot of nudity. You know?
An obscene amount of nudity.
Yes. And American fake breasts. Is that the politically correct term?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so, but that's a way to describe it, I'm sure.
Yeah, because that's still not a thing here. That's still not, hasn't come over from you guys. You've ruined pretty much everything else. That's still not a thing. I hope it never becomes one, but maybe you can cut this part out. Yeah, okay.
You're saying cosmetic surgery, the American trend, has not yet made its way to your side of the
Yeah, and we did have Baywatch on TV in the 90s, so figure. God. Go figure, yeah.
Why did you watch so much bad television back then?
Because that's all that was on, Dan.
I watched, Gilligan's Island. Like, that was okay, sort of.
Gilligan's Island was never on TV. We did have The Fresh Prince, MacGyver, Baywatch.
I approve of those two. No, let Baywatch go.
And Mission Impossible was the TV show was on. That was a thing. And for some reason, and I do not know why, The Guiding Light, which I watched. I watched The Guiding Light. Okay, now that part you have to cut out. Like, I am terribly embarrassed by that, but yeah. Because I knew enough English, and I just wanted to watch English stuff to learn English, right? I basically learned English watching MASH, The Simpsons, and the Transformers cartoons, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
No wonder you kind of sound a little like Optimus Prime.
Okay, yeah. That, if you would have told me that when I was 8, you'd be like my hero. But yeah. And of course, Generation 1 Transformers, not none of the other crap they made after that, right?
So do, wait. Yeah, where's the Generation 1 cutoff? Is that before or after the movie?
I think the movie is the cutoff. I think that's, yeah, I think the movie. And then it gets weird and just new robots that I did not care for as much show up. But yeah.
But it has that song. You got the touch. Dun, dun, dun. You got the power. Yeah. You remember that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I had, I actually had a bunch of Transformers toys. Mm-hmm. Which I think was the point of the whole Enterprise.
you think? The movie and
yeah, it was a repackaged commercial. We all know that now. But back then, it was a magical place where robots turned into cars and shot at each other. So, yeah. Optimus Prime.
Yes.
Did Optimus Prime ever put up a bunch of money as collateral for a mud wrestling event? See, I'm trying to do segues like you do, Joe. I don't think I'm quite on your level yet, but I'm trying. Yeah.
No, but you do have to admit that John Candy fighting three topless women is kind of funny. Like that, as far as physical comedy goes, I think that's pretty funny.
This is another one of those things that since I really had only ever watched the TV edit, it was always super disjointed and I was just like, oh, this is a silly scene and it's going to go on for a little while and then they get raided. But like the climax of that scene, like where he's getting beat up by all these women and he like takes his victory back as he pulls all of their bikini tops off. It's like, what in the hell is going on? And then he's like knocking down like 6-8 women or whatever that are trying to make him tap out or something in the ring there, but then they get raided. Just that whole scene went on so much longer, obviously, because that's the part that always got cut out of TV. But gratuitous might be the word, I think, for like all of that there.
Yeah. But I don't know. It works for me. Like somehow, I don't know. No, right,
you're just fascinated by the idea of people wrestling in mud in a bar, aren't you?
Yes, because it's sort of, that's, you know, when you're, hey, that's what you think Americans do in their spare time, basically.
We're all just deranged, perverse people that like to go mud wrestle in bars?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Well, at least the soldiers are, apparently. I don't know. Like, I was 8. Like, it was that, Transformers, and MASH. Come on.
Like, this makes me wonder, if you had never seen Stripes, like, how differently would you have turned out? Because this appears to have been very formative in your life.
It genuinely was. That's why I chose this movie. Like I saw it a bunch of times. Like that VHS tape, like was worth its money. You know, I don't know. It made an impact. Again, a tennis racket. Anyway.
the bar with the mud wrestling gets raided by the cops for some reason. Is this supposed to be like a back alley, like illegal mud wrestling bar or something? I'm not entirely clear as to why it was raided by the police.
Because they need to get caught for the movie, then.
that is not a legitimate explanation.
Yeah, I know. But it's the one I have.
Did I miss it, or is there literally just no explanation as to why the police break in?
I think maybe because it gets out of hand. It kind of does. Like, John Candy is basically fighting three topless women. I don't know, maybe even in America, that's not really sort of par for the course. Oh, I used par for the course there. Thank you.
Look at you and all of your idioms. No, but seriously, like, what was the intent there? Like, I know this is a futile effort trying to break this whole thing down, but he put up like $400 or whatever to wrestle these women. Is the idea that if he wins, like, he gets like double his money back or something?
Probably, yeah. I think you get, yeah. That's how it works. But they get raided and the MPs, the lady MPs show up again.
They show up really quickly. They seem to have been like right around the corner along with the police.
Well, it's near an army base, so I buy that. To me, that's not a loophole, so yeah.
Sure. So, and of course, they've met them briefly at the bus terminal. They've given them a ride back to their barracks. So at this point, they're intimately familiar with, Russell and, John. So they decide to give them a ride back to the base there. And then they invite him along to go hang out. Well, they don't really invite him along, but they don't really do much about the fact that they all go hang out at Barnegie's place. They go from The part that makes me laugh here is, first of all, the way Bill Murray says Barnacky. But once they're in the house playing their, like, 16-year-old kids with their parents not home, like, make-out games or whatever, Bill Murray's friend there, PJ, goes from zero to I love you in, like, the blink of an eye, which I think is kind of hilarious.
It's the opposite of the Anita scene.
Yes.
I think she took a little bit longer to warm up to Bill Murray than it did for Anita to cool off on Bill Murray. Yeah.
Warm up, Dan. Really? Warm up. You're going to use that phrase.
Well, she was sitting on the stove. He gave her the Aunt Jemima treatment, as he said.
Yeah. Nope.
What exactly is Aunt Jemima? What is that? Like, I don't know.
Aunt Jemima is a type of maple syrup that you put on pancakes.
Ah, okay. Okay, I'm a fan of American pancakes,
and also a horrible caricature. So let's move past this.
What's a caricature about? I don't know what.
Oh yes, the character of Aunt Jemima is a very old racist kind of character.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, I'm gonna go really. Okay, that sounded like, you know, oh, I see, like Uncle Ben's stuff, right?
Yeah, it's kind of in that same vein of stuff there. But it's still a thing today, right?
I think they revised it a little bit, but yes, it's basically
but it still exists.
Through. Yes, yes. They didn't change the product very much, but yeah.
Oh wow! I had no idea. Honestly, I've heard Aunt Jemima mentioned a bunch of times in movies, right? I just never bothered to sort of, you know, it's like it's not on sale here, so you know.
Yeah. This is educational, but let's
skip past Aunt Jemima and get back to whatever Bill Murray was doing off camera with that ice cream scoop to his girlfriend here.
Things. There's the chest. I like the chest. The chest is a funny thing.
You've got the sleeping bag and pillow laid out right in front of the fire, and this is nice empty room. And then of course the footlocker opens at the edge of the bed, and they're all in there. And even Bill Murray says that was interesting.
Yeah, I like that line. That's one of my favorites. So yeah.
Yeah, there's the weird scene with Ramis and Sean Young and the force field thing. I was just like, this is sort of weird, but not as daring, let's say, as Bill Murray's scene. So there's that.
Well, it's Harold Ramis using his odd brand of charisma and charm, which is apparently a thing he has, but it's a peculiar scene. Again, like the whole thing is set up with Sean Young saying like she feels like she's 16 and her parents are out of town. So of course they're going to play like games that teenagers would play in the early 80s, which I guess was this. I don't know. I wasn't a teenager in the early 80s.
Me neither.
Neither was I.
Yeah. Well, we're all in agreement.
But, you know, at the end of this, basically, they're in love. They have girlfriends because they've met 2.5 times. So that's apparently enough for an 80s movie. And then they head back to the barracks where everyone else is super bummed out because they got yelled at by John Larroquette, who like his thinly veiled threat is like kind of hilarious. Like he's not even threatening to like kick them out or to, I mean, he sort of threatens to put them in the stockade, but basically his plan with these terrible soldiers is to just let the general see them at graduation tomorrow. And they're just naturally going to screw up so much that he's going to make them repeat basic training, which I thought was kind of hilarious. It's just like, well, you just opened the door. As long as they don't super embarrass themselves at graduation tomorrow, they're going to be fine.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to be fine because there's so much of the movie left. But there's...
Because are you going to say they're going to be fine because they're the main characters in the movie? Like, let's...
Yeah. It's pretty obvious that, you know, they're gonna pull it all together and at the last minute show them up. I just think John Larroquette's plan is basically just stupid on its face because He has been threatened with being put into the Arctic station if this goes badly for him, and yet he parades them out in this manner. And it's like, if anything, you would be like, this is not the time nor the place for these sort of shenanigans. So very quietly, we'll push them. very far away from this graduation ceremony and just have everybody else do this.
But he's just so dumb. He's like, fine, let's just show up at graduation and let everyone see how stupid you are. And then you'll get, you'll have to repeat basic training and then graduate in 6 more weeks, which is apparently like the worst thing that could ever happen to anyone. Cause I guess Judge Reinhold just, he can't take basic training again. Like, I know basic training is supposed to like break people down and like get them prepared for the army, but I don't think it's really like the worst thing that you would have to deal with being in the army. So if they're not cut out to do basic training again, maybe they should kind of think about what their future career in the army is. But anyway, getting past the point. So basically, they've got 3 hours. It's 2 a.m. They get up at 5 and they've got to, they got to try and figure out how to like move their rifles around and make it look like they're a team. So they go down to the motor pool and then they fight a while because they're falling apart.
I have also never seen Old Yeller.
You've never seen Old Yeller?
I have never seen Old Yeller.
Are you familiar with what occurs in Old Yeller?
A dog dies.
That's a good summary.
That's all I know.
That's close enough. We forgot to say spoilers.
Spoilers for Old Yeller.
That's all I know. Because, again, it's been mentioned so many times. You sort of figure it out, right? But, yeah, and because of Stripes, I looked it up once, but I've never seen. I don't even know what the dog looks like. So.
It's a little more depressing than that. The young boy's dog gets rabies, and the boy has to shoot his own dog, and he's very sad. So
wow! Okay.
Yes,
I'm learning so much today.
It's a very depressing movie, but there's another one of those like odd racial moments where Harold Ramis makes the offhand remark of the, you know, when they're trying to get their rhythm, black guys help the white guys, and John Candy just decides to throw down and have a fight over that line, apparently.
Well, yeah, it's that's one of those things where it's not a sort of a positive influence, I guess. But yeah.
And then, of course, this is the moment in the movie that, of course, the movie has to have, is where Bill Murray goes on a 3-4 minute long speech rant that motivates everyone to get back in line. And suddenly, you know, they're all happy to fall in and they all immediately know how to do their moves and they all do them in sync now. So, okay. He had to have his speech that was clearly not written at all.
Really?
No, of course it was. It was ridiculous.
Okay, I did not sense the sarcasm in there.
Sorry. I know it's still early for you.
Yeah. And then the greatest thing ever happens, the actual graduation.
Well, of course they wake up an hour late. It's 3 o'clock, graduation's at 2, so they've still got an hour to sleep, which is another one of those things. It's like, really, really, guys? That didn't need to be there. But anyway, so yeah, they had to sprint on over, and they make their grand entrance in their little dancey march. Would you care to describe this one for us, since this is your favorite part?
Yeah, but like, it's not really a grand entrance. I actually like how they show up because it's sort of subdued, right? They just file in and then they sort of spread out. And then why does the chicken cross the road thing happens, which I swear to you, that is, that's how I remember like 1993. It's that scene. I think that's all I did.
I always thought it was funny how they, you know, they start singing songs as soon as they start marching. But, I always thought it was funny where they have their little boom shakalaka or whatever. And then they've got their, their silly, like, sidestep thing that they got going on there. But, like, the way Bill Murray is, like, always kind of, like, dancing in place and, like, twirling his gun around, no one would have any of that nonsense if there was the actual army. Like, even if you wanted to be cute and do, like, a song and spin your guns in a funny way, it's like, Bill Murray is just like crazy hamming it up. And especially when he like ends on the little, he just makes the weirdest face when they say sir at the end of their song. He's like pointing at him. It's just like that image is forever burned in my head of Bill Murray making that goofy face with his rifle sideways.
And I love the fact that the audience is like so into it. Like they're all like, oh wow, this is the army, right? Yeah, look at those guys. nobody, that's not really a realistic sort of response.
What's the line in the song? He stepped out of range, he got hit by a train, he ate no chicken no more. What is the actual words? I think I made those up.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. No, because you said it and now I'm thinking it's the same thing you said. Now I'm not going to be able to. Oh man, I could. Maybe if I
do it from the top. Do it from the top.
No, you're not getting that. Yeah, I've revealed way too much. Like I've revealed way too much.
Okay, we'll make Joe sing it. Joe, sing along.
Joe, yeah, go.
No.
Great. No, but honestly, like that is like one. Like I don't know. That's Stripes to me.
Order, who? Sasip, right? Who lighted the chicken? Cross the road.
Take it from the left to the right.
Right.
Hit.
He stepped out of rank. Got hit by a train.
He ain't no chicken no more. No.
Man, you see, I'm awake now. Yeah.
where the hell have you been, soldier? And the answer is, of course.
Training, sir!
Training,
sir! So the way he says training, sir, right, is yes. Again one of those Bill Murray, like he's basically making a face. I think that's how you say it. But it somehow works. And I don't know why, because it's so over the top. And you know Bill Murray, and you see him just going just way over the top. But it somehow, I don't know, like that whole training, sir, like that's...
Yes, maybe he sounds like an elephant when, of course, he says...
What kind of training, son?
Army training, sir!
Army training, sir!
It's the most ridiculous thing. Yeah. And this is the part where Bill Murray's going a little bit high for me.
Well, but really, after after the dance, like, that's... I don't know. Like, I think it makes sense in the context of the entire scene, maybe. Like, anything they do within that scene is fine. From the way they get there to the way it ends, where they just throw hats in the air. Which, by the way, none of the other platoons that graduate do, right? The other platoons just march by the little podium with the general, and that's pretty much it. And supposedly the general was supposed to decide by the way the other platoons marched by the podium who gets the special assignment.
Sure.
Just seems... Yeah, because that's how you tell.
Like all old people who don't understand contemporary culture, he goes, these guys are weird and hip. They must be fun and knowledgeable and
real
with
go-getters.
It or something. Yeah, they're real go-getters. Let's give them an experimental project, which I'm not entirely certain what the honor is that he was bestowing upon them, because they basically just, you know, guard a...
No, but I think they're RV. Supposed to become the crew of it, right? I mean, that's probably the plan later on. I don't know.
Who knows? All we know is that they go to Italy, and they're super stoked to be in Italy, even though, like, I like when they walk into their barracks, they're all like, look at this place. This is pretty awesome. We're in Italy, and it looks exactly the same as the one they were in the United States.
But Dan, it has that sign that says they're in Italy.
Right. It says, we're in Italy now. And Bill Murray's like, hey, who wants to go check out the Vatican? Anyone want to go see some other cool stuff? And they're like, we better go to bed. We got an early day tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the important part is, this is where the other movie kicks in. And we
yes.
We very clearly go off the rails into some other territory when...
Czechoslovakia.
Yes, when they have the vehicle. It is a recreational vehicle that is... fully armored and ready to go with all kinds of high-tech stuff.
Yeah, but it does sort of... It still looks modern to me, that van. Like,
well, let's be clear. This van is basically John Roderick's wet dream. It's exactly what he would want.
Mm. No, but I'm just... like, just the design of the thing... Because American cars are just terribly designed. I'm sorry. It's just... I do not understand. Like, I don't know. Yeah, okay, anyway. Like, but that thing actually looks for a Winnebago, right? That's the word, I think.
Or, yeah.
Well, a recreation vehicle. That looks pretty okay. Like, it still looks... When I saw it, like, a couple of days ago, I was like, that van could be on the streets today. And it probably is somewhere in America. But, like...
It's a very nice color green as well.
Oh, yeah. So, that, you know, spearmint gum green is that color that they picked for the van. Great.
And of course, what else are you going to do when you're bored and guarding a recreational vehicle is to drive to Germany to go hang out in a hotel with your girlfriend for a weekend, which we're not entirely certain why the military police are in Germany, let alone staying in that very nice hotel. But
and I also love the fact that it's one of those things where, you know, Americans said, yeah, Italy, Germany, they can just drive there, right? That's a long drive. Yeah, but it's... it's that, you know, it's not like like going from, I don't know, like North Dakota to South Dakota, right? It's not, it's, or Carolina, or I don't know, I just try to name two states that I know you are together.
Okay.
Yeah, Germany and Italy are not that that nearby, I guess. You know?
Well, I mean, they're close, but not so close that any of this sounded like a good idea. It wasn't like, oh, we're gonna just, you know, jog out for a minute and we'll be right back. This was very clearly a long haul trip that they were gonna commit themselves to. So I don't know why they thought it was a good idea, or why the MPs that they are with thought this was a good idea. But they're just like, this is just gonna work out so well for everyone. And somehow later on, from this exploit that they themselves fully committed themselves to and premeditated, they are on the cover of all of these magazines at the end of the film because this was such a great idea. So I don't understand why this is just so lighthearted in its, like, let's just go do this and, oh, it's not a big deal, kind of brush it under the rug kind of a thing. And it's just, this is where we get into, like, the wacky, like, other story about, like, our Cold War comedy of crossing borders and, you know, all the zany shenanigans that are very different from the preceding part of the film. So I feel like this is a big shift in tone and in sort of the level that they're committing themselves to, because it's just goofy.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. But I will say that, you know, when I was when I first saw the movie, it's always cool when sort of Europe is in the movie. You know what I mean? And when they said Italy, it's like, oh, we neighbor Italy, right? It's like, that was, you know, and then they said Czechoslovakia, which we have nothing to do with. Again, I'm from Slovenia. I'm just going to throw that out there because people confuse the two, and we're not even neighboring countries like Slovakia and Slovenia. But like I said, every time I hear Czechoslovakia, I laugh because it's the same thing when Yugoslavia gets mentioned, which we were a part of and we're not anymore, right? It's just one of those things where, I don't know. I found it amusing even back then. So, but I do agree with you. It's a different movie. Like, this is Stripes 2, Czechoslovakia Bound or whatever. Yeah, well, it's a completely different film. Yeah,
I love that you can of course tell that they are in Germany because when they come out of the hotel, Bill Murray calls an old couple Hansel and Gretel, which is, that's the clear indication that you're in Germany.
Yeah, and
everything looks like Hitler's bunker, right? I mean, Chateau. It's always Hitler Chateau. We're in the Alps. Look, it's basically a castle, and that's the hotel. I hate that, like, every time that happens, because we have the Alps. The Alps are not like that. Like, they're, like, just pretty mountains with, like, anyway, sorry. That's a pet peeve of mine. Like, seriously, every time people show the Alps in American movies, it's usually just people skiing in the most luxurious resorts imaginable, and, like, there's three of those resorts. Everything else is pretty normal. Like, yeah, and not all houses on the top of mountains looks like, you know, the eagle's nest. That's not, that is not the Alps. Sorry, that was like a PSA from Europe.
This is history, history lesson from Defocused and Stripes and Anja. Thank you. So, of course, John Larroquette, in fear of losing his job, decides that they can't tell anyone. They're just going to go on a rescue mission. And since he's completely incompetent and wearing that very strange suit that looks like it was made out of the couch I used to own in the 90s.
We can't gloss over his horrible, horrible, terrible way of luring this woman over to impress her with his recreational vehicle.
And a very expensive dinner that he promised her, apparently.
Yeah.
First of all, where did he find this woman in Italy?
There's tourists in Italy from America. It happens. It's a thing.
Dan. That actually does happen.
I don't know if you're familiar with being a tourist in Italy, Dan.
I'm not familiar with being a tourist in Italy. Also, I just wanted to point out, it mentioned that the place they were at was called Fort Milano, but Bill Murray says, like, let's go see the Vatican. And those, if they are, in fact, in Milan, that's a very long trip, so.
Well,
how would you know that? I don't.
I would have no idea. I've never been to Italy, and I've never been there twice.
Oh, hilarious. Americans coming to Europe, and then they go to Venice.
So, yeah.
just the biggest tourist trap in the world. That's what it is. Venice is the Disneyland of tourist traps, man.
I was just following orders, just like Bravo Company.
I know. Okay, sorry. Yeah, go on. So yeah, to say that.
If it wasn't if it wasn't weird or gross enough, John Larroquette is just clearly trying to sleep with some woman that he met and by showing off his fancy RV, which of course is a very important project, which means he's in line for a promotion for some reason or something.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty ridiculous. And the whole like rounding everybody up to secretly, covertly go do this and the stupidity of just trying to get through a border checkpoint in what is obviously not a civilian vehicle and having everyone armed. Not a good plan.
Yeah. And so. the stereotypical border guards from Eastern Europe, which I still find hilarious. Just two guys in brown coats and long underwear.
Those guys are pretty swayed. Great, actually.
Yeah, they get swayed by, you know, spirits, basically. You know, just any kind of alcoholic drink. It's like, oh, fine, just go. Like, that would work.
And like, one keeps getting coffee and alcohol spilled in his face, which is very a nice, funny, reoccurring joke.
Yeah, that is true. That is true, yeah.
But you don't think their plan of everyone get in your street clothes with an M16 rifle and get in the back of this large truck and we'll just blow through a border, you don't think that's a good plan?
No, the thing, like, if that's the border between, okay, so let's say, I don't know, like, what border they're crossing exactly, because it's not clear. But the fact that, like, if that's an actual Iron Curtain border, it would not just be two guys. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Just two guys, even, like a little post that you can drive right through.
Even if it was the most obscure sort of, you know, border posting like ever, it would not be two guys in a shack and a, like a, basically a papier-mâché ramp. Like, that's not. Well, yeah.
You can tell the filmmakers didn't think too highly of the Russian fortress there.
Yeah. That is true. A glorified farm, basically. Yeah, okay.
But then, they make a wrong turn at Albuquerque or Czechoslovakia, and they end up captured, which, sure. I don't know why they just had those three tanks rolling along there, but that's fine. And I'm not entirely certain what the idea of they were torturing them for. Like, what were they trying to get information out of them is kind of what it seemed like, the interrogation. But they just decided to torture their captives.
But it's like 1980s Soviet comedy torture. It's
you tie them to a chair, you just slap them a bunch of times. It's not really torture.
Yeah, no, this movie is very light on the actual like warfare elements. No one dies, not at any point in this film. Even when there are rockets and guns being fired, everyone's pretty safe. So there's a certain lightheartedness to all of this, especially the torture element.
But of course, Sergeant Hulka thinks that Captain Stillman is full of it, so he just does a barrel roll out the back of the truck before they get captured inevitably, because apparently he's the only true soldier. So he calls it in, and if he could reach them on like radio in Germany, why didn't they just call him and say like, you guys should come back because you stole the truck and that's not good. You should bring it back now.
Well, maybe they tried to call and nobody answered because they were inside of the castle thingy, whatever.
House. Heat room service.
Yeah. And, you know, so I could understand that part. But the part that's weird about that is that he's sending out this radio transmission to everyone. Presumably all of Germany would hear this as well. And it's not like there weren't any American installations or German installations that would be listening on those frequencies. So they're the only ones that respond. That's good. And then they fire up a Google Maps and they you know, lock in the coordinates and head on over. That's how that works.
I love that pad with just the buttons on there where it's like, I hope you never need to change the input here because you've got like 12 buttons and it's kind of pre-coded that really all you have is the ability to push like numbers 1 through 10 four times.
Yes.
Well, the tech in the RV is pretty... The targeting system for the rockets.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's so spectacular. The joysticks, they've got that, like, DOS sort of graphics display of the tower, which how did it actually create that? But
I'd like to think if I ever make a movie, like I won't, but if I'd ever make a movie, I would just stay clear of tech. Tech and basketball, because those are the two things I actually immediately notice when it's done crappily, right? And those are things I would just... I would steer clear of.
Tech and basketball, those are your wheelhouses right there?
Yeah, basically, yeah. And because I just recorded one of my Slovene podcasts, and it's a sort of a movie, TV show podcast. And we had a guy on that's medieval sword fighting, kind of. And he's the same with like any kind of sword fighting in movies. He's like, what the hell are they doing? Yeah, so that's basketball and tech for me. So I'd still care of those. But the joystick is pretty solid looking. I'll say that. Like, it looks... It's totally impractical to use a joystick to sort of fire missiles and guide them. But
well, it's state of the art tech, man.
Yeah, and yeah. Didn't he have like two? There was one in each hand where he's like controlling it. Obviously, it doesn't actually have that many points of articulation on the rocket launcher itself. So it added another element of comedy. And firing it, and the guy clearly sees it's being fired and jumps out of the way to safety. And we have like five shots to make sure this guy's safe.
Yeah, nobody dies in this movie, do they?
No, not a single person in our army movie. It is too lighthearted for that. And through all of this, then they get out and they all go and get that guys out, but nobody's guarding the van full of rockets and weapons and identifiable United States stuff. That they're all, you know, heading in to rescue everybody. They get them all out of there, and the knocking down the door scene and all that amazing stuff.
And the lamest flamethrower ever seen.
Oh, the flamethrower was rad. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Just the thing, the fact that it's on the back of the truck and just on the top of it, because you can clearly see it burning the back door, right? You can just... When it stops firing, like the gasoline, you can see it going down the side of the track. At least that's how it seems to me. It's just not very practical.
Like, it's not the best made truck and or prop.
Oh, that's true. Oh, mate, is the flamethrower on the front or the back, or is the rocket launcher? I get those two.
Oh, confused. The large caliber artillery is on the back. That's what they use to blow up the tank shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I think the flamethrower is technically on the side, the way they shot it.
On the side, yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, if you're going to put a flamethrower on the side of your truck, it would certainly be on the passenger side facing to the
right. Yeah, but I will say again, to an 8-year-old, that RV looked pretty badass, honestly.
You were going to use it to go rescue your friends from being tortured and held captive by some Russians.
Yeah. Well, we were sort of in the middle of the whole Cold War thing. The Russians liked us, okay, so, you know. That's a very American thing to say, Dan. A very American thing to say.
I'm sorry for being an American. There's literally nothing I could do about it. Although,
no, we can talk about, you know, the Cleveland Indians and Aunt Jemima if you want.
Goodness.
We can do that.
Hey, we've talked about this. My grandmother was from Czechoslovakia, so though I have a little bit of – no, I don't have any cred. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you are an enigma, Dan, and then your last name is German. Yes. You are an enigma. I don't
see,
know.
See, so
what's
I got two.
Po-
I got two. I got two of the locations in this movie going for me.
That is true. Yeah.
Wait, crap. Three. Oh, wow. I forgot about America. Anyway, so they go in and they use some plastic explosives to try and blow the door open, and they hide behind a very flimsy card table and try to blow the door up. Which apparently they're fine. They can just be 6 feet away behind a little wooden table, but the door doesn't open. And until John Candy tries to squish John Larroquette and ends up just knocking the door off its hinges, which is nice. He should have tried that a long time ago.
Yeah, but there were guards in front of the door then. Right?
Yeah, that would
now
have been.
No, it's just Swinger and Russell. So yeah.
Yeah, it would have been tough to knock the door down if there were guards out there. But of course, they've taken so long that Russell had to drive away, and of course they have to sort of like make their way out on foot. And of course, this is where the combat battle ensues. And this is my favorite part, because like you've got that wall of like burning barrels that are just there for no reason. And then like they start to get knocked down, like when the tank goes crashing through. And my favorite part is like these dirty, screwed up barrels that are on fire. Like one of them falls over and you can see into it, and it is bright and shiny and gold and brand new. And it's like, damn it, the prop department forgot to do the inside of the barrels.
Yeah, not very Apple-like. What's the painting, the wall you don't see? What's the thing? You know that sort of saying that because Apple cares, they do, like, they paint, like, they do the whole thing. Ah, forget it.
That sounds like a really nice metaphor. I don't actually, I'm not familiar with that one, Joe.
Yeah, it's a,
that
it's
was
a thing.
That was the back of the bookshelf, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, yes. I think that's it. Yeah, yeah. Because you know it's there, right? Even if nobody sees it, you know, and then, yeah. Okay. Just one of those tropes. I'm just trying to use all of my idioms, basically.
I should read all of these Apple books that I buy.
So you just have a stack of these that you've bought about Steve Jobs and you haven't read them?
No, I read the other one. What's the one that John Syracuse hated? I read that one.
Walter Isaacson's Steve Jobs. Oh, I read that too. That was crap. That was not a good book.
I bought the new one and I just haven't read it yet because it's in iBooks and I keep buying things in iBooks, but I hate the idea of reading things on my phone, so I don't do that.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah,
that's a plan. That's almost as good of a plan as going to Czechoslovakia with an RV.
It's okay. You can resell it at the used bookstore.
Sure. I mean, this coming from the guy who continues to rent things on iTunes on my laptop and then try and airplay them to my TV, but we won't get into that. I didn't have to do that this time because I had a physical piece of plastic that I put into a DVD player.
Ah, so it was on DVD.
And I did not torrent the movie. Did not.
Well, we've accomplished so much on this show.
Did not.
Is, in fact, by the way, Joe, one of those discs that is full screen on one side and widescreen on the other.
Yes. Those are the best.
Yeah. It's pretty great. It's all silver. It's pretty slick looking. It is the future of DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I'm not a technologist, but I think we can pretty much call that.
Yes. Before you know it, everyone will be walking around with portable DVD players. let's get back on to whatever the track that the movie was on at this point with the flaming barrels and the escape and things.
Yeah, the RV pulls up backwards and blows up a tank, and then everyone gets on, and then they drive through the border again, and one of the Russian guards, who's now in his underwear, spills coffee on the other one again, because it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
again, that was sort of racist, because maybe it's a Czechoslovakian guard, Dan.
I was just strictly going by the uniforms. I apologize. I don't want to be Russian normative or whatever that would be.
Thank you. I'm just looking out for my people, man. Just looking out for the Slavs, we are all collectively called, and pretty much have nothing to do with each other besides that.
We do have you here for your perspective as well as your humor, so thank you.
Okay. Well, you have me here. Joe is still getting used to the idea that I'm on the podcast. Anyway.
Damn it, Joe. Will you get on board already?
Yeah,
I'm warming to it.
they break the ramp again, which the two soldiers have fixed with duct tape or something.
Oh, no, wait. On the way out, they parked like an actual truck in front of the driveway, so they drive through the actual building.
Oh, yeah, they drive through the little building next to the big building, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The little shack.
That's what I meant. The ramp, the shack. Yeah, I was looking for that word, yeah.
That's German for yes. But so anyway, they're all safe, and they take a plane ride home, and they're all famous now and drinking champagne in their private jets and stuff.
Except for John Larroquette, because this is all his fault for some reason. No one else is at fault. Just John Larroquette.
I do like to think that there is a fair amount of like legitimate disclosure that has to happen by the time this is all over. So sure, they admit that they borrowed the RV for the weekend, but of course, the fact that everyone got kidnapped was John Larroquette's fault. I'm sure Sergeant Hulka saw to his being sent to the Arctic, even if he tried to cover his own butt by trying to rescue the mission himself.
Yeah, but Bill Murray and Harold Ramis and the MPs don't actually get in any trouble. They are on the cover of magazines, so.
It's good promotion. Like, I'm sure that there was a story that came out of Czechoslovakia and Germany and all of those various countries talking about the event that went down. So the Americans had to put their spin on it. So they made them heroes and put them on magazines.
Yeah, like, oh, hey, look, we saw this exact vehicle that cost them so much money to make. So now we know to look out for that and search it if we see it at a border. So that was a good plan. Too.
Okay, and it was an act of war.
Yes.
That was, like, you do realize that, right? This is the 80s, the early 80s. That was a genuine act of war. Like, that wasn't, it was an act of war. Like, American troops going into a country that's basically part of the Eastern Bloc.
Bill Murray did give that one guy a bottle of vodka when they rolled up, so that's got to mend at least a few fences, right?
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah,
and they didn't kill anybody. So,
yeah, I don't think you're familiar with how America thinks of itself, because America itself is probably totally okay with doing all this stuff. So there's that. Like in you know the movie Spies Like Us. Spoiler alert.
Yes, yes.
There's also some Cold War stuff in that, and it also kind of shakes out in a certain way. Although it's not really the main character's fault. But we're basically all right with doing like Cold War hilarious comedy stuff. Like in Real Genius, it's like, oh, we gotta have these lasers so that we can, you know, blow up missiles and assassinate people from space. So we're totally fine. Making light of the Cold War.
Yeah, but I will say that they showed like the two guards sort of are kind of ridiculous and everybody at the base, but like they show them as humans sort of. Do you know what I mean?
You mean like after they break through the shack and drive away, like they basically say, what's the line? An RV would be great for picking up women in Minsk, and then they do that goofy little dance thing? Like, what?
Yeah, but like I don't know. I sort of found them endearing as a guy from like Europe, I guess, or like Eastern Europe. I don't know. They seemed like fun caricatures, not sort of is degrading the word, sort of not a negative sort of caricature, I guess. Like I really do think that. It never bothered me, I guess, you know. It never was here they go again.
They're all very laid back about their acts of war, apparently.
But I don't know. They sort of make them seem human, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not like some Americans that call everybody Russian that's from Eastern Europe, you know. Not pointing any fingers, mm-hmm. just saying.
It is unspecified in this movie. I could be just as right as you.
Although he does say Minsk, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
So take that, which is not proof of anything.
Yeah. But it does sort of help your case a little. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. So let's see. Let's run down the list of what everyone got. Harold Ramis is on the cover of a magazine looking awesome, like shooting a machine gun, which, by the way, is a frame grab of the battle they were having in Russia, which I'm not sure, like, did they bring a photographer
they're having,
with them?
Where are they having the battle, Dan?
God, Czechoslovakia. I'm sorry. It's a Russian base is what I meant to say, but still, Czechoslovakia. But anyway, like, it's a photo of him from earlier in the movie, so it's like they had a photographer with them or something.
Yeah. But I do love the fact that Holka opens Holka Burger.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's a pretty good name for a burger joint. I would eat a Holka Burger.
I would definitely eat a Holka Burger, yeah.
Mm.
Shake Shack should look into that, because Shake Shack does not sound fun. The Great Burger is just a weird name.
What's weird about Shake Shack? They've got shakes in a shack.
Yeah, but the burgers are the point, right? Not the shakes.
Well, presumably, but you know, if they called it Burger Shack, that wouldn't really have been great either.
Well, for a tourist, that made more sense. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, what about In-N-Out?
Go to Burger Shack.
Does In-N-Out make more sense to you for burgers?
Yeah, but it's In-N-Out Burgers, right? In-N-Out Burgers.
No, it's not actually
in the
name.
It's not just In-N-Out.
It's
not in the name.
No, it's just In-N-Out.
Oh, we have a thing here called hip-hop, seriously, which is the gas station store. I don't think it's called that anymore. But yeah, that's sort of the same thing, because you literally go, you know, in and out, basically.
But, you hip and you hop?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
I think it was the national sort of petrol company trying to be cool. Did not succeed. I think they lost the name. Maybe. I'll check.
please report back.
Yes, this is vital information.
Okay, I'll do it after the show because I have a clicky keyboard, so I don't want to ruin the recording. But yeah, okay, I'll check. Yeah.
Good Lord. So let's see the rest of our crew. You can win a dream date with Ox on, what was it, Tiger Beat magazine or something?
Yes, that was pretty funny, because that doesn't make any sense for any reason. But
well, he's got that sort of bashful, adorable pose on the magazine there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
John Larroquette, as we mentioned, was sent to the Arctic, of course. Bill Murray, was he on Time Magazine talking about the new army?
No, it was Newsweek.
Newsweek, of course.
And it was a concerned question mark about the new army.
They have a right to be concerned, especially when it's Bill Murray.
Yes.
Yeah. And let's see. Sean Young stays in the army, and she's comparing tanks. PJ apparently goes to Playboy, which, okay.
Or Penthouse.
Oh, whatever
I think
it was.
It's Penthouse, isn't it?
Because
Penthouse is the creepy one, right? Penthouse is the creepy one, and Playboy is sort of the not so creepy one. They're both.
I'm not sure I feel comfortable making that distinction.
Yeah, this is going to be an instance where I will plead the fifth, and Joe, you may want to pick that as well.
Complete ignorance.
I have never seen
part.
A Penthouse magazine. I have never seen a Penthouse magazine. I have seen Playboys. We do have
somebody ring a bell quickly.
Okay.
I like how I keep walking into this sort of weird areas for you guys, because of my ignorance. I'm enjoying this. The Penthouse thing and the I won't name the what's it? The maple syrup lady again. But yeah. I'm enjoying your uncomfortable sort of silences. This has been fun.
So anyway, Bill Murray goes to shake Hulk's hand, and Hulk gives him the old too slow and gives him a salute. And that's pretty much the end of it. Oh, we forgot to talk about John Larroquette's salute. His ridiculous sort of like completely vertical downward salute that looks like it would break your elbow if you did it too hard.
Yeah, but if you have that scarf, I don't know what it's called. Joe mentioned it. I think it's all part of the character. Just a guy that sort of looks like he if this was like England, he'd be royalty. If you know what I mean, he looks like some old money family person that went into the army, or like fifth generation, you know, army guy. They just got a rank because, you know, his dad was a general or something. That's what it feels like to me.
You think when he went to finishing school as a young boy, they gave him an army ascot and taught him how to salute in this very awkward manner?
Yes. Mm. He's basically Marilyn Mann in, you know, in military school. Because I still can't believe Marilyn Mann.
Oh, yeah, dear
I love
Lord.
That show.
I think we need to take a step back and talk about our fan fiction here.
That might be
Merlin's.
The most offensive thing that you've said on the show.
Well, no, but what would Merlin's stripes look like?
The fifth? I'm pleading the fifth? I don't know.
First of all, said it in Florida. Yeah. We need an entirely new podcast just to talk about Merlin Mann in military school.
Or not. That would be fine, too.
There already is one. I'm really glad John asked him about that. Okay, we're doing follow-out at whatever the hell Jason and Mike called us. And yeah, we talk about other podcasts.
Let's just mention as many podcasts as we can.
let's tungle that for another time. We'll put that in the parking lot. But back to Stripe. We all like Stripes, right? It's a good movie. We enjoyed it. It's fun, haha. It's very 1981, and it's very Bill Murray. Do we have any other thoughts on the movie that don't potentially involve racism or xenophobia?
I have none. I think I've expressed my thoughts in the last hour and 45 minutes. So.
All I have is just racist and awkward stuff. So I'm going to – yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. Well, it's unintentionally racist. I genuinely did not know about Aunt Jemima. I've never seen a bottle of that brand of maple syrup. Like the maple syrup we get here, because me and my girlfriend actually like American style pancakes. I think there's just one brand we get here.
What is American style pancakes? Is there another style of pancake that you're more familiar with?
Yes, an actual pancake. What you guys have is not a pancake.
It's a
waffle. What you guys do is basically a waffle.
Hang on.
Made in a pan.
We have waffles and we have pancakes, and there is a crepes. We have waffles and pancakes. What's the difference?
Crepes. How do you call those? Crepes? Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thin ones.
The thin one. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the thin one. That's a pancake.
That's not a pancake. It's a crepe. It has a separate name.
No. That's new. Over here, that is a pancake. It's called a palacinca. Okay, that's what it's called. That is the literal translation of a pancake. You guys basically make a waffle in a pan and call it a pancake.
It's called a right? what? Isn't
Which
that,
I understand.
Isn't that those arcades in Japan?
Yeah, but in our language, palachinka has nothing to do with a pen. A pen is a pono, right? It has there's no correlation there. So what a crepe? What's I don't know. Like, I don't know, even know how I say it. I know, yeah, but that's a French word, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a French word. But yeah, yes. that is an actual pancake. You just make pen waffles.
But it's not crispy. They're not crispy.
Yeah, they're soft and fluffy.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to have a soft flaccid waffle, would you?
Oh, please let that be the show title.
No.
Soft flaccid waffle.
What has happened to this show?
Well, at least we didn't broadcast this live. That would have been a disaster.
We're gonna have to cut all of this out.
I'm sorry.
Oh my god.
Anyway, yeah, that's okay. I'm sorry.
Congratulations to anyone who is listening to this live, because no one else will ever hear this.
I just want, for the record, when me and my girlfriend were in New York, we actually went into an IHOP, right? That's what you guys call it.
The International House of Pancakes?
Yes. And we just went in and sat down because we didn't know you had to. There's a lady at the front that you have to, so that she shows you to your table. We just ignored her because we usually don't have that here.
There is usually a sign that says, please wait to be seated, but that's okay if you just want to ignore that and go about your business.
Yeah, we were total tourists. And we just sat there, and like all the waiters were like, who are those people? Like, who said those? Like, we don't know why you are here. And we're like, we're Eastern Europe. We just, you know, we played
that. Bring us pancakes. So. This isn't a pancake. What's wrong with you people?
Yeah, they were actually pretty good. Like, yeah, I was surprised because it's a chain, and you know, American chain restaurants are usually crappy. But that was pretty. Yeah, it was the good flaccid waffles, I guess. So I'm sorry, I can't.
Oh God! And the list of other things that we need a separate show for is your apparent enjoyment of all of the chain restaurants in the United States, which is a terrible travesty.
The Crunchwrap Supreme. Thank you, Casey.
Did you get a quesarito? Was the quesarito around back then?
No, we didn't get it. We got that. Ursha got the burrito in with the sour cream. I don't know what that's called, actually.
I think they put that in every burrito they make, so I don't really think that's a distinguishing feature.
But it's like yeah, okay, but you get it like on a plate, you know, a plastic plate with a. This is so American. That was my favorite thing. Like the shape of the, like the bottom of the plate, right? The plastic thing has like two sort of, I guess, ridges, like, that are sort of the width of the burrito. So it doesn't move around. Like, I love that. Like, who makes that? Like, that only in America. Would there be there's a guy in the research and development department of Taco Bell. Like, the burritos are moving around, guys. Like, we need to do something. Like,
you think it's distinctly American that we have bespoke burrito plates for specifically Taco Bell burritos?
Yes, because nobody in the rest of the world would bother with that. Like, they just use a plastic thing, like, as a plate. But, like, I guess it needs to stay if you take it out or whatever.
Well, I mean, right? you can blame us for having an attention to detail, but if you guys want to just ignore all that stuff, that's fine, I guess.
Oh yeah, okay. That's a good way to spin it. But
that's fine for Slovenia, I guess.
We don't have burritos here.
Oh well, God! How do you live?
We do have a bunch of Mexican. I'm just saying, like, burritos were not a thing that sort of. We don't have a Slovene version of it, basically, because it really is just a salty pancake, right?
So you don't have a crepe that you roll some avocado inside of and. Various meats.
Well, we do have Mexican restaurants, but honestly, like before the Mexican restaurant showed up, I never ate anything like that. Like, the closest thing we have is like a wrap with a kebab. You can get a kebab in one of those, like in a tortilla.
That's not close at all. But can we back up for a second to the fact that you called a burrito a salty crepe?
Yeah, but that's what it is. Like, what's the difference? Like, why I don't?
Oh, a salty pancake. I'm sorry. Thank you, the chat room, for correcting me. You said it was a salty pancake.
Well, I'm trying to, because it's thin, right? The burrito's thin, right?
Right, but it's a tortilla. Are you familiar with tortillas? For the love of God,
oh no,
man.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, the burritos, the crunchy thing that's sort of like a pocket thing, right? Or am I getting those two confused? Help me out here, guys.
No, it's burrito. It's wrapped in a tortilla, but you could fry it and you can make it an enchilada or something.
No, but I think he's talking about the hard shell taco.
That's the taco.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's a fried tortilla. Yeah, we use tortillas in multiple ways, yes.
Yeah, but the ones at Taco Bell.
Our people use every part of the tortilla.
Yeah, but a tortilla is a salty pancake.
That's what
it is. Pretty much. It's it's the same function.
This right here is an act of war, my friend. Calling a tortilla a salty pancake, that is an act of war.
Don't know what goes into it. It's just not sweet, right? A pancake's sweet. That's.
You know. I want to flip my table right now, but my podcasting equipment is on it.
Well, you know. Well, I think we had a lot of controversy on the show, I'm kind of proud of, actually. I really am proud of it. So
this is certainly one for the history books.
This will make an impression. Yeah. That's for sure.
You know, Dan, all us Russians, we're all the same.
Yeah, I don't, God, for the love of dear. Well, it was lovely having you on the show, despite your hatred of tortillas and pancakes.
It's not a hatred. I'm just saying it's not. That's a waffle in a pan. It's not. I don't know, man. It's just that gets me every time. I do love them, though. I do. Like, I love tortillas. I love Mexican food. And I love American style pancakes, which I will keep on calling them that, because that's what they are. Europe is older, my friends.
We're going to start calling it Europe style football. Does that work for you, or is soccer more offensive?
I just saw the episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Just bear with me. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Trevor Noah, the South African guy that's taking over the Daily Show. You know that, you know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember if I saw that episode.
I didn't see that episode.
Okay, and at some point during the conversation, he says that the Super Bowl, which is the final game of the NFL, right, was seen by 100 million people or something like that. I don't know, he just does this figure. And then he very rightly points out that just a league game between Barcelona and Real Madrid, a league game in Spain, of a Spanish league, it can be like the third game of the season, right, will be watched by about 4 or 5 times as many people. And then he says, clearly, that is the football.
I guess, like, we just clearly have more interesting things on TV than they do over there.
Oh, snap.
Oh, that's I'm not even going to, you know. One of my co-hosts plays for Barcelona. Well, he did for 2 years. His contract's now, but like, that's not a thing you say, man. That is not, that's, you know.
I'm not in this argument at all. I played the goofiest of all goofy sports. I played lacrosse, so I have no foot to stand on.
Yes, which is, you know.
I thought you needed feet for like, both of these.
No, but like, and good for you for calling it a sport. That's nice. That's cute. Nice.
Don't make me come over there. I will.
Please make him go over there. That would be hilarious. No, but I don't care. I don't have a horse in this fight or whatever. You guys can duke this out. It's between you. You can call foosball whatever you want.
Foosball.
That's the table soccer.
No, foosball. Actually, that's the slang for football here. Foosball.
Really?
That's what. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's
what we call it.
Well,
that
defeated my joke.
Game in the back of a bar.
Yeah. No, you actually. That was really close to the sort of Slovene, or so maybe I'll say Balkan. We say foosball. That's the slang word for it. The actual word is nogomet, which the literal translation is, and I am not joking here, it's foot throw. That's the, if you want to go literal there, yeah.
But
I don't think you can throw things with your foot.
No.
I know. That makes no sense. Yeah, it makes. Again, this coming from a nation that calls whatever the hell that is football, where feet are barely used, right? Right?
Well, but they are used.
For running.
In multiple capacities. They're used for running as well as kicking the ball from time to time.
Yes, from time to time, meaning maybe twice a game. And it's still called football. That's all I'm going to say.
They kick it. The first thing they do in the game is kick it. The very first thing they do.
Oh, yeah. And it's always the skinny guy that kicks the ball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the guy who barely got through college on his football scholarship. Not that I knew any of those guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has been a wonderful episode talking about Stripes. We do talk about movies on this podcast.
Most of the time.
Oh, man.
Thank you again for joining us. It's incredibly early there still for you, and we appreciate that you brought your early morning insanity to this podcast.
It was a pleasure. And thank you for having me, Dan. And,
What did you do, Joe?
His lack
of enthusiasm, his lack of enthusiasm for me being on the show was apparent from the start, from the get-go. Thank you again. So I'm just, I love Joe. I really do. I love the man. And genuinely thank you for letting me be on your show. Because it's one of my favorite shows. Like, this is, it's one of those that I actually listen to. Like, I've pretty much had most of the people that I listen to regularly on my podcasts. And you guys were on gracious enough to be on my show. So genuinely, thank you for having me on. Like, this is me being serious. But it was fun and controversial, apparently.
Fun and controversial.
That's what I really look for in my weeknights. thank you so much for being on, and we really appreciate having you on. And I don't mean that as a joke, I just can't stop laughing. but this was great.
Oh, that was the most sincere 15 seconds ever. But yeah, okay, awesome.
Oh God! I think I'm having a heat stroke. It is so hot.
Oh, just an update. I did, I did paste it into the chat, but the stores at the gas stations are in fact still called Hip Hop.
Russia is a very strange place.
Yeah, yeah. There. Okay. Anyway, I don't know what. Bye.
I think we wrapped that up.
Where can people find you on the internet? Not that it won't be in the show notes, but you should probably say something, I guess.
Yeah, so but before we forget, who are you and what do you actually do?
What do you like to be known for?
I do this show, which I do in Slovene most of the time, but I do also do English episodes, and those are at stormingmortal.com, and both Dan and Joe have been on the show, there were fun episodes, and the show sort of the frequency of the episodes is kind of sporadic, because in between I do a bunch of Slovene ones, and in Slovenia, on the Slovene side, the number of interviews I've done is 107, I think. Yeah, and I think on those are like, I think like 25 of those are English, so you can listen to me be less controversial there, actually. and I'm AtomicXX on Twitter. That's my English account. And if anybody's curious, you can see my Slovene side at apparatus.si. That's two P's in apparatus, which I know you guys know, but yeah. And my Slovene Twitter account is Anzet, which is A-N-Z-T, E-T, I guess, yeah. So if you want to see me post in my native language, which is not Russian, but Slovenian, because we are a sovereign nation in Europe. Yes.
Well, thank you again for being here, and I genuinely have no idea how this is going to be received, but I thought this was a hell of a lot of fun.
Good luck with the edit, Dan.
Thank you. I'll get right on that. Oh dear.